Hi, this is Dr. Bill Meyer. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. You can hear the show live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., and there are many more podcasts for this and all our other faith radio shows available on our website. You can just go to myfaithradio.com. And thanks so much for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
He's a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer live.
Welcome. It's so nice to have you with us here on the Faith Radio Network today. You ever get caught up in the comparison game? Especially you ladies, maybe you're on Facebook and you see all the wonderful things that your friends are doing and how incredible their children are and all this trip to Disney World. And maybe you've gone on Pinterest and you've seen the incredible crafty moms and you just feel so inadequate. Well, there's a reason for that. It's wrong. And we're going to be talking to Kay Wyma about our culture of comparison here in just a bit. Kay has written a great new book with a wonderful title, I'm Happy for You, Sort of, Not Really, Finding Contentment in a Culture of Comparison. And Kay will be joining us here in just a few minutes on the Faith Radio Network. Well, I don't know how much you have been following the whole Bruce Jenner transgender story this past week, but the whole thing just breaks my heart. Every time I hear an interview with Bruce, it just saddens me to my very core. And yet the gay activist movement and the media have jumped on this whole transgender bandwagon. And really what they're trying to do is they're trying to convince Americans that what is truly abnormal is perfectly normal and natural. And here's what's really tragic. A large number of Americans, particularly younger Americans, are buying into this lie. They're buying into it even though it flies in the face of everything we know from a scientific perspective about sexuality and gender. I don't know if you heard earlier this week, Austin Hill interviewed one of my friends from Focus on the Family about this issue. His name is Jeff Johnston. Jeff and I had a chance to work with Focus on the Family's Love One Out conference for a number of years. We traveled around the country speaking on the issue of homosexuality. And Jeff had some wonderful things to say. If you missed that interview, I'd encourage you to go to myfaithradio.com and you can check out the audio on Austin's archive page. Just look for Jeff Johnston from Focus on the Family. I think the title on the podcast says Bruce Jenner and transgender issues. I'd also encourage you, if you have time this week, to Google an article. It was actually an op-ed from the Wall Street Journal by Dr. Paul McHugh. Dr. McHugh is the former psychiatrist-in-chief at Johns Hopkins Hospital, and he actually used to direct the sex reassignment surgery unit for transgendered individuals, people who were confused about their gender identity, who wanted to surgically alter themselves. And Dr. McHugh, after doing some research, they decided to shut down this whole unit because his conclusion was, and many of his colleagues' conclusion was, that this is a psychological issue. This is not something that needs to be dealt with through surgery. I wanted to just share a little bit of his op-ed with you. And again, you can find the entire thing at the Wall Street Journal website. He says, we at Johns Hopkins launched a study in the 1970s, comparing the outcomes of transgendered people who had the surgery with the outcomes of those who did not. Most of the surgically treated patients described themselves as satisfied by the results, but their subsequent psychosocial adjustments were no better than those who didn't have the surgery. And so at Johns Hopkins, we stopped doing sex reassignment surgery, since producing a satisfied but still troubled patient seemed an inadequate reason for surgically amputating normal organs. And he goes on to say, it now appears that our long-ago decision in the 1970s was a wise one. A 2011 study in Sweden produced the most illuminating results yet regarding the transgendered, evidence that should give advocates pause. Listen to this. The long-term study, up to 30 years, followed 324 people who had sex reassignment surgery. The study revealed that beginning about 10 years after having the surgery, the transgendered began to experience increasing mental difficulty. Most shockingly, their suicide mortality rose almost 20-fold above the comparable non-transgender population. This disturbing result has as yet no explanation, but probably reflects the growing sense of isolation reported by the aging transgendered person after surgery. The high suicide rate certainly challenges the surgery prescription. And, I mean, this op-ed is just chock full of very powerful arguments for really exactly what the Bible teaches, that God created us as male and female. And so what should our response be to individuals who are confused about their gender identity? Well, I would argue that we need to respond with both truth and love. Certainly, we should be caring and compassionate. If you know an adult, if you know a teenager who is struggling with their sexual identity, who is confused about their sexual identity, you want to reach out with love, Christian love to them. But we should also encourage them to get all the facts before making decisions that they could regret for the rest of their lives. And folks, I'm afraid this whole thing is just going to continue to march down the path to abnormalcy. I guess that's the best way to put it. I just saw this week that the federal government is now putting some policies in place through OSHA about employers and transgendered restrooms. And this stuff, I mean, we've talked a lot on Faith Radio in recent months about the growing attack on our religious liberty, our religious freedom in this country. And I think this is going to be the next bulkhead. And so, man, just be in prayer about this, because we're marching towards Gomorrah, folks. I'm sorry. We need a spiritual revival in this country. And we need God to intervene, and we need to be on our knees about this, and not look at it casually or just say, oh, that's just ridiculous, or as you know, it's just gross, I don't want to pay attention to it. Man, start paying attention to it, because it is going to impact us, and especially going to impact our kids. And as a dad, I've got a 12-year-old, a 10-year-old, and an 8-year-old at home, and I shudder to think what the future holds for them as, you know, little believers who are growing up in a culture that is becoming increasingly hostile to biblical values and to God's design. So, on a more positive note, I found something this week that I just loved. Don't you love it when you see college students who are super smart and who are doing something to make a difference? And this story has put a big smile on my face. Some very creative college students have invented a new device that could save the life of babies accidentally left in hot cars. And you know, every summer we see these tragic stories. There was just one this week about a teacher who left, I think, an infant in a hot car, and the infant died. Well, five new graduates of Rice University spent their senior year designing an accessory for car seats that can alert parents that they've left their infant in a sweltering car by themselves. And it can also keep the child's temperature cool until help arrives. How neat is that? This device is called Infant SOS, and it was designed by these engineering students at Rice. It can sense when a vehicle has stopped and whether or not there is a child in the car seat. And it alerts parents through light, sound, and text messages that their infant is potentially in danger. And get this, as the temperature rises in the car, there is a heat-triggered material that keeps the infant's temperature down. Rachel Wang is one of the students who designed this infant SOS, and she says the benefit of our project is not only the alert system, but also the cooling system. The best way to keep a child alive is to completely remove them from the car seat inside a hot car. So what happens is, let's say you've left your little one in a car seat and you've got distracted, and if the child, when you first stop, a row of LED lights around the top of the car seat starts flashing, and this little beeping thing, oh, hey, there's a child in the car, don't forget. If the infant is still in the seat after 5 minutes, the system sends text messages to a preset list of phone numbers, which can include 911. Isn't this neat? The project was started a couple years ago by a different group of students, and this year's team was focusing on this cooling system to cool off the infant in the hot car. And they have a goal to make this system easy to use and affordable. They've got a target price of $150. And man, oh man, if you want to learn more about this, you can go to rice.edu, Rice's website, and just put car seat in the search engine, and the story will pop up. Well, 16 past the hour, you are listening to the Faith Radio Network. And coming up next, my guest, Kay Wima, as we look at the culture of comparison in the United States and what we can do about it. If you are feeling like you just don't measure up compared to some of your friends, stick around because Kay has some great insights for us up next on the Faith Radio Network.
Conversation continues right now, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Now, here's Dr. Bill Meyer again on Faith Radio.
And we'd love to hear from you today. If you have any questions for me or for our guest, by all means, give us a call. If you're listening to us on Faith 90.5 in Duluth, thank you for tuning in today. Or maybe you've joined us on Faith 1270 in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Thanks for making us part of your weekend. Well, our guest today is Kay Wills Wima. Kay is an author, a blogger, and a speaker. She has five kids, ages 7 to 18, and she says, one SUV with a lot of carpool miles on it. Before transitioning to stay-at-home mom, Kay held positions at the White House, the Staubach Company, and Bank of America. 3 years ago, Kay tackled youth entitlement in her first book, Cleaning House, A Mom's 12-Month Experiment to Rid Her Home of Youth Entitlement, a book that my wife and I have used in our own home. She's been featured on The Today Show, CNN Headline News, The Glenn Beck Program, and on Focus on the Family. She attended Baylor University and the Thunderbird School of Global Management. Kay and her husband, John, live in Dallas, and today she joins us to talk about her new book, I'm Happy for You, sort of, not really, Finding Contentment in a Culture of Comparison. And Kay, welcome to Faith Radio.
Thanks so much for having me, Bill.
First of all, let's talk a little bit about your background, because I think our listeners will find it fascinating. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, didn't you work for Marilyn Quayle as sort of her advance person in the first Bush White House?
I did. I worked for both Marilyn and for the vice president. So I had a great opportunity to get to be on both of their staffs. They're really great people.
What exactly did you do for them?
You know, it was such a fun job. I wish my kids could have the opportunity. It was I was a lead advance for them. And so when the White House travels, they basically take the White House with them. And there's an arm from the Secret Service that goes, and from White House communication, and then from the staff itself. And we would be the staff representatives, kind of just preparing the way for them wherever they went. And when you work for the vice president, you get to go pretty much everywhere internationally. And so it was a fun, just a really fun, high intensity, very high stress, and lots of problem solving. I think that's what I loved about it the most, just and getting to see the world.
You must have been pretty young at the time, because I saw your photograph, Kay. You must have been like, what were you, like 19 years old when you were doing this?
Oh, come on, Bill. I look exactly the same as I did then.
No, I was actually complimenting you. That was actually a compliment.
I think I was really in my early 20s and kind of late 20s. I did it They were real sweet, and they pulled me back even when I left to go get an MBA. And when I was finishing that up, they lured me back with a fun trip to Switzerland, and they were like, "Just one trip, just do one." And then I never came back really back to even move out of my dorm at Thunderbird, because they kept me on the road from that point on until the election was over. So,
wow, fascinating.
It was fun. It was a neat, you know, and it's one of those things that I think when living in this country, you just grow used to life as we have it. And I tell you, you just travel and you realize how great it is. And just the impact, the positive impact that the generosity of this nation has had on the world. And I know there's good and bad with everything, but lots of good people out there.
You know, I'm so glad
the country.
Glad to hear you say that, Kay, because that's my perspective as well. And I've traveled a bit internationally and done some missions work. And when I have gone to third world countries and just seen how so many of the world's population live, such a huge percentage of the world's population living in abject poverty. And then I come back to this country, man, I want to kiss the ground. I just, you know, it is, with all the problems that our country has, and certainly we've been talking about those things a lot recently on Faith Radio, this is still the most wonderful country in the world, and we are so blessed to live here.
So blessed. And one thing about even working with Mrs. Quayle, I really got to go to every podunk place in the nation, and to go to these really great states that aren't necessarily destination locations. You know, they don't have a beach or all kinds of things that would take you there as a tourist. And the people were it's just incredible. I loved it. It was such a wonderful opportunity. I'll never forget it. I'm very grateful I had it. And it just makes you thankful and appreciative for the people that you live around.
I'm assuming you were working with the Quayles when the whole controversy came out, where Dan talked about single parenting and some mm-hmm. of the mm-hmm. risk factors involved in that. Of course, he was just, you know, skewered by the media at the time. And then several years later, was the op-ed piece, Dan Quayle was right.
Yeah.
Tell me about that experience and what it was like for you being in the White House.
For me, I was in New York City when that story broke, and I remember it. And it was, you know, I believe, and I could be wrong, but I think it was after the potato incident.
Which,
you know, that was crazy, because that, you know, that's the advanced person's nightmare, because our job is to go in and make sure that there aren't going to be gaffes. And I never understood the way that story got the spin, because those were, for the vice president, those were laminated cards from the teacher, and that were copied directly out of a textbook. And it was like, why didn't we spend that on textbook errors? And so it was interesting the way that those things would fall into his lap, because he's such a principled person, really vehemently believed in what he was doing and family values. And he just pulled it out. And it was a great, you know, Bill Kristol was on his staff, was the chief of staff at that time, and Spencer Abraham was his deputy chief of staff, and smartest group of people that just were around, and they were willing to take the stand for what was, you know, just a few things that are principles that we believe in and that bode well for people. And so, yeah, he took some heat for that in the moment, but it was interesting to watch how it played out several years later. And maybe that's a great lesson for all of us, that the things that you see today aren't necessarily going to be as important as the foundation that they're built upon.
Mm. Do you still keep in contact with the Quayles at all?
Sometimes we all went back. His every vice president has their bus put into the Capitol of the U.S. Capitol, and that was fun. They invited all the staff back for that, and it was just great to see a lot of old friends, because you live life together, and regardless of who the person is in that position, it's an intense place to be. And these folks, you know, they get into public service because they really want to serve the country. And so, you know, in a pie in the sky, great world, we'd all agree on certain things, but sometimes disagreement can get you to the middle of the road where we can have good conversations. And I hope that things like what you were talking about earlier with about the Jenner issue, that somehow we will land on a place where you were talking about being able to love each other instead of just tearing everybody down.
Glad to hear you say that, Kay. Well, your new book is really wonderful, and it addresses an issue that I've talked a lot about on this program, and that is this whole comparison game. And so many, and I particularly women, I mean, men are impacted by this too, but so many moms I know are just feeling like they don't measure up. And a big part of that, I believe, is the amount of time they spend on social media and the images that they're seeing and the stories that they're hearing, all of which we know aren't really true, or they've certainly been massaged a bit. They've certainly been exaggerated a bit. And yet we are, what is it, comparing, I guess, our insides to other people's outsides. And it's just, it is the wrong way to go about life. It's not biblical. And what prompted you to write this book? Okay, were you hearing from other moms? Were you experiencing this in your own life?
I really saw it the most as I was traveling around speaking and speaking about the entitlement issue. You know, entitlement centers on narcissism because it makes you focus on yourself. And it shocked me pretty much across the board, any room that I was in, and it didn't matter if it was mothers or fathers or even kids, this competitive world that we're living in that seems to be on steroids. And it's not competition that's the healthy kind, where our economy is based on a competition model, which is great. But when you start making your life about comparing yourself to someone else, and it is the highlight reels that we're comparing ourselves to, it sucks the life out of people. And I, all these discontent folks just wanting an answer and wanting it to stop. And it's like, what is the deal? You get to the bottom of it, and comparison is the vehicle that takes us down these roads towards expectations or the measuring up or the being, you know, the land of Ur, where everything is prettier, better, faster, all these things that we think we have to be in order to be okay, they leave you flat. And it goes to, you know, Teddy Roosevelt had that great quote that comparison is the thief of joy. And I think it really is.
Boy, I did not realize Roosevelt had said that. And I love that quote. Can I say it again?
Yeah, it's like, of all people, Teddy Roosevelt, because that guy really, for all intents and purposes, had it all, you know?
Yeah.
And he's the one that said comparison is the thief of joy. And it's fascinating.
Great. Our guest is Kay Wills-Wyma. She is the author of a brand new book called I'm Happy For You, Sort of, Not Really, Finding Contentment in a Culture of Comparison. Kay's website, she has a great blog. It's themoteblog.com, themoteblog.com, to learn more about her and about her first book, which is called Cleaning House. We're going to take a quick break here on the Faith Radio Network. If you have a question for Kay, we would love to hear from you. 877-93-FAITH is our number, 877-93-FAITH. We'll be right back.
Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
Welcome back. I want to say hi to our friends who are listening on Faith 1190 in Madison, Wisconsin, where you're enjoying a nice late spring day, 66 degrees, partly cloudy skies in Madison right now. Thank you for tuning in to the Faith Radio Network. My guest is Kay Wills-Wyma. Kay is an author, a blogger, and a speaker, and she's written a new book called I'm Happy For You, Sort of, Not Really, Finding Contentment in a Culture of Comparison. Kay, let's start off by talking about this culture of comparison. How does it play out in our day-to-day lives, both in the lives of adults and the lives of kids?
Well, I do think social media is one of the things that is relatively new that has made this on steroids. It's hard for any of us to walk out the door without a computer literally in our hands, and that temptation to look, you know, is almost always there, and it's very, very hard to not compare. you also have this obsession with body image. I mean, even, again, going back to the Jenner story that you had at the beginning, no one ever compared him when he was on the cover of a magazine to another man, and yet the instant he comes out, is on deck, you've got people already comparing his waist size, his cheekbones, his nose to Jessica Lange, all these kinds of things. Is so interesting. It's like, why all of a sudden? And then you have headlines that are just peppered. There was a woman in Maryland that died last week from having injections into her backside to try and make herself have a larger bottom to look like Nicki Minaj or one of the Kardashians. And so it's one of these things, it's like comparison, we know it's bad, and we're taking it to the level where it actually is causing us physical harm, because people are doing so much to make themselves look a certain way that they would like to. And you can even do, believe it or not, you can do, you have selfie help that will let you Photoshop your selfies so that you don't have to look like yourself. And this is, the kids are living in this. And I think it's easy to point to them, but it's like one of those things, I need to put the oxygen mask on myself first before I really can begin at all to try and help my kids. Because we all do it. We all do it.
Let's talk about it from a parenting perspective for a moment, because I am grieved when I see what some teenage girls are experiencing today.
Yeah.
The level of depression and anxiety, and I believe so much of that is tied to social comparison. And what, first of all, what have you heard, what have you read about the impact this is having on our kids?
Well, there's even a new term that's come out from the American Pediatrics, American AAP, I think is what it's called, and it's called Facebook depression. There's actually a clinical term that's been assigned to it, that when people enter into Facebook, they feel worse about themselves by the time they get off. Now, kids are really not on Facebook anymore. That's definitely something of an adult level. Kids are into Instagram, Pinterest, these new sites that are called Snapchat, where you can quickly take a picture of yourself and then it supposedly disappears. And it's this the issue that they have found with it most are the likes and the shares that are defining the self-worth of someone that participates in it. You know, I'm okay if I get a certain number of shares. I'm not okay if I don't do that. And you throw in the friends aspect, where they want to have a comma in the number of friends that they have. I think we all probably do. And yet it's fooling us, because those are not real friends. You know, that's a very broad group of friends that has no depth to it. And here come the layers off, because what we crave is to be known and to belong, really and truly. You know, that's sort of the, what people would call the God-shaped hole in your heart, that you just want to be accepted. And if that's what we're looking for to define who we are, or our acceptance, that is a slippery slope, and it is for sure a foundation that is always shifting.
I have to believe that Satan is just reveling in all this, because he is seeing lives devastated. He's seeing teenage girls kill themselves because of depression over the fact that they don't measure up, that their body image is not right, that they don't have enough friends. And man, that just grieves my heart. This really at its core is a spiritual issue, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's a brilliant strategy, just brilliant. And it is interesting to go down that road. And as I started researching it and really thinking about it, you know, how did it begin? It's hard to not go back to the garden where it all started, you know, because you had Adam and Eve really in the epicenter of sufficient, if not, well, actually perfect provision. And yet something got them to where they weren't focusing on the provision in front of them. Their eyes really started to focus on themselves. And comparison was the tool that was used, because it was like, this tree over here, these things that have been set off limits for you, he's got something you don't, and you can have it, so go for it. And the minute they did, their eyes were anchored onto themselves versus being focused outward, which is where they had always been before, you know, because they weren't consumed by themselves. And yet at that point, I find it interesting that all of a sudden they realized they had no clothes. And then tried to fix everything themselves. And they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it, and we can't do it. But therein, it's like, it seems like this all-consuming problem, and yet we know that it's not. because the answer is, you know, come to me. You know, I will help you with this. I accept you. You are fully accepted and fully loved. And by the way, you have unique giftedness that I gave you from the get-go. And what somebody else's giftedness is has nothing to do with yours. So celebrate them, which is where the I'm happy for you comes from. The sort of not really is me. I'd like to be happy for you, but the truth is, you know, maybe sometimes I am, but more times than not, I wish it was me, you know, or I'm letting you define me, all kinds of things. And it's that, it goes back to the, if we can just for a minute really be okay in who we were created to be, boy, there's a huge burden that is lifted.
You know, you think about, and you were talking about the garden, really at its core, what we're discussing here is pride and envy. And so many Christian thinkers over the years, even the early church fathers, have written on that topic,
right,
that you have the situation where it's the envy of what our Heavenly Father has and has created, and I want that. And of course, now it's taken a whole new form. It's really gone out of control in our current culture. And envy and pride, you know, the old expression of pride cometh before a fall. It is so true and it is so tragic. So what's the answer? Let's talk about it as a mom for a second, because you've got obviously kids that span a wide age range. Mm-hmm. How do you, in your own home, help to mitigate this, help to, you know, prepare your kids as they're younger, and you have teens that are in the middle of it right now, so that they don't get caught up in this comparison game?
Well, I think it's this conversation, you know, is technology going away? Is social media going away? Doubtful. And is that really the issue as much as my relationship with it is the issue? And so when I hit up against these things, which I, you know, at the end of the year, I hit up against it a lot, just the award ceremony in and of themselves. It's like begging for every parent in that auditorium to wonder why their kid isn't receiving the award and the kid too. Or if the kid wins it, why didn't I get more? I mean, it's always this, there's never enough. Enough is elusive, as is the best. You know, that doesn't really even exist. As soon as you hit it, there's more to get. And so it's a mental game, because I think it is a spiritual issue. And so what I try to tell myself and my kids, let's catch it. When you start to feel that heaviness, catch it. And I think about it like a warm reboot of a computer, you know, control, alt, delete. Do you remember when we used to do that, Lena, you know, when your computer would be spinning out and stuck and you would just control, alt, delete, and it would warm start your computer? And it's like, do that to yourself. Control, you know, see the thoughts, control it and stop. Okay, so control, I recognize I've got it. Alt, get an alternate perspective. You know, if I can for a moment actually appreciate the fact that my friend, little friend Robert over there got the 8 medals, and for a second, thank the Lord that there is a kid like Robert that could get all of those medals, not have it define me, then I can for a moment possibly be happy for them. And for me, it could be the vacation in Vail. You know, we probably aren't taking a vacation this summer, and we probably didn't last summer or the summer before, because we're putting our kids through school. And so can I be happy for those bikes that I just saw of my friend on the beach, or be happy for them, you know, that they're getting to do these things, rather than have it sap my joy and then stop it, you know, stop doing it. And those little exercises can help you find the solid footing. And I think that's what helps us during the day.
You know, one of the things we're noticing in our family, which as parents breaks our heart, is that even among our own kids, we see this comparison game.
Oh,
and,
sure.
You know, our two daughters, who are 8 and 10, are as different as night and day. I mean, our 10-year-old is very athletic, and she's kind of on the tomboy side and zany, and she could care less about, in fact, she hates frilly dresses and you know, strap shoes and all that stuff. Our 8-year-old is Miss Ballerina. You know, she's just loves everything that's girly and frozen. But what's happening is the 10-year-old, as she sees the 8-year-old being complimented for, oh, you're such a beautiful little girl, and I just love that dress, and I just love the way you dance, she feels like this need to kind of put her down. And so we've got to the point in our family where we will, it'll happen at the dinner table, and we'll just have to say, stop right now. Do you see what you're doing? You're trying to make yourself feel better by putting your sister down. And we're not going to, and it happens with the opposite direction as well. It's all three kids are involved in it. And my, there's just nothing I think that tears up a parent more. We love all three of our kids the same and differently because they all are obviously designed by God very differently and have different talents and abilities. And has that been something that you've had to deal with in the Wyma home?
Well, always. I mean, isn't that part of it? Didn't you do that with your siblings? It's just and then the lovely not fair mantra. I mean, it's just it's incessant. And it's like, oh, it's so exhausting. But oh my gosh, what a great opportunity, really and truly, to train them, because if they can do this with their siblings, they can do it with anyone, really. And so it's like you go back to Scripture, you know. You had, even after the resurrection, when Christ was on the beach with Peter, and he asked him, Peter, you know, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? Yes, yes, yes. And he said, well, then go feed my sheep. And what did Peter do? What about him? Do you remember that? And he's
yes.
pointing over at John. What about him? And it's like, what is, he has nothing to do with you. And so to me, I think, well, I'm so glad, because if Peter's doing that, I'm no different than Peter is. And what a great thing to tell your kids. This is a part. This temptation is in you. Don't give into it. It has the power to sap all the joy from your life. Don't do that, okay? And my daughter, I have the same two daughters. One is naturally thin. The other one is perfectly fine. But she looks at that sister and has that sister's thinness try to define her body image. And at one point, I was trying to, you know, just stop those thoughts. It's like these thoughts that hold them captive, it's free them from it. And I asked her, do you think I'm fat? Which is a scary thing to ask your kid. And she said no. And then I took a friend of mine that she knows, it's a mother of her friend, and I said, put me next to Mrs. C. Now do you think I'm fat? And the child was silent. And I was like, her size has nothing to do with me. Please remember that. And in the same way, her giftedness, the fact that she loves the music and can move to that music in a beautiful way, has nothing to do with you. And if your kid can actually believe that and go to the fact that they are fearfully and wonderfully made, and in that, isn't that from the Psalms?
Yes,
and it
I
says,
believe it is.
I know your works are good. And it's like, okay, do you believe that? Forget about me, because, you know, it's like a mom or a dad is like the Charlie Brown teacher, wah, 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 you know? So forget about me, but could you go to the one who actually is truthful, who does what he says he's going to do, who is faithful and trustworthy in every situation? And when he's, you know, his works are good, you are one of those works. Are you going to question him? And just, it's like, I love those opportunities. They wear me out because they are incessant. And my gosh, with five kids, I am always doing it. And then doing it with myself, trying to remind myself. And yet I think, what great training ground. I'm convinced the longer I do this, and we are not, oh my gosh, we're not perfect or are very consistent or good at it. And I just think, plant the seeds, you know, because this is the training ground. Train up your child in the way they should go, and when they get old, they won't depart from it. And it's like, fill their backpack with truth, you know, so that they can bank on that as they get older.
Some great words, Kay. Our guest is Kay Wyma. She's the author of the new book, I'm Happy For You, Sort of, Not Really, Finding Contentment in a Culture of Comparison. We have three copies of Kay's book to give away, and if you would like one of those, if you give us a call right now at here at Faith Radio, 877-93-FAITH, we'll put you into a drawing at the end of the hour. We'll give you a copy of this great new book. Again, it's 877-93-FAITH. We'll take a quick break and be right back on the Faith Radio Network.
Now, back to Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
Thanks so much for joining us today on the Faith Radio Network. If you are listening to us on Faith 1200 in Fargo, Minnesota, or in Fargo, North Dakota, or Moorhead, Minnesota. We appreciate so much you making us part of your day. Also, for our folks listening on Faith 1090 in Waterloo, Iowa, thank you for joining us. Our guest is Kay Wills-Wima. She is the author of the new book, I'm Happy For You, Sort of, Not Really, Finding Contentment in a Culture of Comparison. Kay, you have a chapter in your book called Great Expectations, Navigating Life's Detours. Let's dive into that for just a bit.
Okay.
Tell me what you mean by life's detours and how we are called by God to handle them.
Expectations are interesting, aren't they? They
That's without a doubt.
I mean, they really are, and I think it's another one of those sneaky little areas of life that sometimes we realize we have them, and sometimes we don't realize that we have them. For me, it can be something truly as simple as going into my drawer in the morning and opening it up and seeing a pair of pants that I think I should be fitting in, that maybe I can't fit in since that fifth child. And there go my expectations, and they're shot. And again, my joy is thwarted in that moment because I've compared myself to something that I think I should be. We have it all throughout life. And there's an interesting aspect that's called the U-curve. And it's a social phenomenon that goes across the world. It doesn't, you know, you'd think it'd have something to do with financial means or anything like that, but it's not. It's a sociological issue that says that at the beginning of life, you know, to a certain point, you have kind of contentment and happiness, and then about, used to be about your mid-30s, it would start to dip down, and there'd be a great, you know, kind of, you'd go off into sort of a canyon of discontent, and you would stay there until probably hit about your 60s, and it goes back up. And they couldn't figure out why, you know, why that's so consistent and why it has such a profound impact on people, and it's really related to expectations. And it comes along with things like the midlife crisis, that your life isn't exactly the way you thought it was going to be. And then we hit this discontent mode because we haven't met expectations. And they trick us and thwart us all the time, and they've seen now that they're calling kids in their 20s are having a quarter life crisis, which I think is so sad because they get out of college or whatever and their life isn't what they expected it to be, and it's prolific right now, and again hitting these high numbers of depression, and in our nation, sadly, suicide is at an epidemic rate, and you know so much of it is driven by what we think we should have and that we aren't. There's so many aspects that are involved, but to let those expectations drive our contentment or joy is a dangerous thing to do. You can use comparison to inspire, and that's a wonderful way to approach it. But when we use it to let it define our self-worth, we tend to have that land negatively for us. And I don't know why we do that, but we do. And that's where it's like catch up, because that's going against the grain of what truth would tell us. And we aren't defined by expectations or by what somebody else is doing.
Okay, I know we have so many listeners right now who may be struggling with unemployment, or maybe they're going through a health issue. Maybe they just got a diagnosis that is just really, really frightening. Maybe they're going through a relationship issue. Perhaps they've gone through a divorce, and life didn't end up the way that they expected it to. And sometimes there's a tendency when we're in those situations to think, where is God? He's abandoned me. Job experienced that. What should our response be when there are life detours that are really profound, and when, you know, bad things happen to good people?
Yeah, and I think you have to add into that tendency the tendency to isolate. And it's one of these roads. I'm convinced it's why we were not put on this earth by ourselves, because we actually really do need community. I mean, the relationships that we have around us are so important to help us in those moments where we do hit bumps in the road. And I think it's one of those things that you can absolutely expect that in life. It will happen. How we meet those mismet expectations, how we meet those bumps in the road, how we deal with them will really define and probably exhibit to ourselves what our beliefs actually are and where our trust is anchored. And for me, I have found that truthfully, the more time I spend in Scripture knowing God, not even hitting up against Scripture with expectations, because a lot of times I think we read the Word with ourselves as, reading it through a sieve of me, where I bump up against these things and I let them define me and how I am versus the Word, rather than letting it tell me about the Lord. Even things like in Corinthians, where it tells us how to love, you know, it's patient, it's kind. Well, right there, I'm out the door. You know, if I'm letting that define me, I am not patient. And quite frankly, just talk to my kids, and they'd be like, she's not kind. I try to be. But if I can switch it and let that be him, you know, you are patient, you are good, you are kind, all those kinds of things, and anchor in that truth, it makes the ground not move. And I can tell you that even in the last month in our life, it's funny that you would talk about expectations. What we hit at the end of this year with one of our kids was the furthest thing from what we could have expected. Even a year ago, if you had told me what we would be living through right now, I wouldn't have believed you. Mm-hmm. And yet, even in those moments, it's been interesting because it doesn't take away the hurt. The hurt is very real, but the foundation has never moved. And I don't know why we are going through what we are going through. And if it was my story to tell, I would tell you, but it's not. It's one of my kids' stories. And for a great person, you know, and I'm like, why would this stuff happen? Because it's not fair. It's not right. This should never be happening, and yet it has. And it's like anchor on truth and then go to the fact that, you know, the Lord works and usually works in 40-year increments. And so it's like don't let the moment of today define everything. And there we'll tie it back to social media again, because in the world that we live in, everything is telling us that the moment matters. And that is rarely the case. There's so much more to life than just the moment.
Mm, and we see that continually in Scripture, Kay. Boy, some great thoughts. And one final thought. There's one positive to comparison, I think, if we compare ourselves to our Savior. We're trying to do that in our own family with our own kids and say, okay, let's stop for a second. Would Jesus have said that to his disciples? And of course he wouldn't. And our kids have to stop and go, oops, that's, maybe not the direction I should be going. And so what a great model we have, for comparing ourselves. Of course he's God, but fully man as well. And a great place for us to start. Kay, we're out of time, but this is just such a wonderful book. I'm so glad you wrote it. And I want to commend this to our listeners, especially moms. And boy, if you've got a teenager, especially a teenage daughter at home, I'm happy for you, sort of, not really. Finding contentment in a culture of comparison. Once again, Kay's website is themoteblog.com. Themoteblog.com. Kay, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is the Faith Radio Network. You have yourself a wonderful weekend. My friend Neil Stavem is next with the weekend edition of Connecting Faith. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. If you'd like more information about this show, just go to myfaithradio.com and click on the program page for Dr. Bill Meyer Live.